This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Boom, let's do it on a Victory Monday. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Heating and Air with the Super Bowl winning scout, King of the Krusty's. It's Brian Broaddus. Let's go.
Thank you very much for that, Chief. Round two?
Round two.
We're going to have like a round two.
Round two. Fight.
This is really...
Let's get it on.
This is still round one.
Yeah.
We're going to get 2.0 in the expressway. We'll look at the offense in the expressway.
Yeah. Mike a little early today? Mike on
For the first time all season, Mike McCarthy arrived at the podium about 90 seconds early.
I think he was.
You see how he plays when the pressure's off of him?
Yeah. He can win some games when the season no longer really matters. Right when you start wanting to lose the games, they're like, no, we're going to go ahead and win those.
No, we need to win those.
In your face, people who like higher draft picks and a new coach.
You ever seen a prettier interception than what Jordan Lewis had?
It's up there, man. Especially with the... With the arm brace on,
yeah,
you almost never see you. That's for trench players. That's for front seven players.
Oh, he's a trench player.
He does have a trench player sort mentality.
He does.
Yeah, he's a dog. That was an incredible play.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's interesting. When you watch the end zone copy of it, it's like he never looked back for the ball. It's like he was reading McMillan's eyes. And when, you know, but he was staying with McMillan. You could see they were connected going down the field. But he got like right up on top of him. And then when that ball came down, you see from the end zone copy, his hands go right between McMillan's hands.
Yeah,
he went up. His hands went up to catch the ball.
And then he just, I mean, the dog mentality just ripping it away. That's my ball.
Yeah, he got his hands in the middle of McMillan's and was able to I'm catching this ball. You're not catching this ball.
This ball's mine now.
Yeah. So
that was a great play.
It was a great play, but he never turns for the ball, but he's connected the whole way, and his ability to get his hands in between McMillan's hands, pull the ball. It just is an incredible play when you look at that, the interceptions and how, you know, I mean, one of the prettiest ones you'll ever see. Like I say, he never looked back. He was looking at McMillan, and as soon as the guy put his hands up, he put his hands up too. So great job there. The final play, the white fumble.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Just pure chaos.
Was chaos. Okay. White, you know, he's the running back. And so he's going to step up on this play. He's going to step up to pick up the blitz. Like the Cowboys are showing that mug or that A-gap, that blitz that they look where they bring their linebackers up tight.
Crowd the line.
And the way people have kind of defended it is to put backs up in the, like between, you know, in the A-gap up at the line to try and like keep the blitzers from coming through the middle. And what happens is, by giving them that look, Nick Vigil comes flying on the blitz. And White is picking him up. But what happened, it left Lewis on the outside unblocked. So he times his blitz perfectly.
Lewis?
Yeah. And right at the snap, you see... Like, they're going to try and pick up everything solid across, and they're going to let the furthest guy from the ball go, which was Lewis. But Lewis did a great job of timing it to where he gets in on Baker Mayfield.
And Zimmer, once again, dialing up something where he's got a free rusher.
Yeah.
He's been outstanding with that.
He's done a great job with that. AO and Wilson are great shape and coverage. And Mayfield really has got nowhere to go with the ball. I mean, he's looking like he wants to throw, and he's got nowhere to go.
He's fighting for his life with Jordan Lewis hanging on to his legs.
Yeah. But somehow he shovels the ball. It turns into like a pretty incredible play. It just shows you the strength and determination.
Two dudes with all the dog in the world.
We've seen Baker Mayfield before. Didn't he get Bosa by the face mask? Like he was outside the pocket of the San Francisco game. He's holding
just
him
kept
off.
Kept him at bay the whole time.
Hold him off, and then he makes the throw.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much that kind of determination and power. But somehow he gets the ball shoveled forward. And this is a pretty incredible play by Maris Leofau. Because Leofau, he's now got White. And he's got White tied up.
Yeah, White goes from being a blocker to all of a sudden on the safety blanket.
Yeah, now a catcher. And he's running with the ball. But he's flagging the ball.
Yeah, he's just holding it out like he's Michael Jordan toying with the defender.
You see it on tape and you're thinking like, okay, why did that not get knocked out? You know, with him dealing with Leofau and all that, why didn't he get knocked out? But you could tell on the play, as Bland's coming forward, he doesn't go try and make the tackle because the ball's being flagged and then you see White try to kind of tuck it, but he doesn't get it tucked. He doesn't get it secure.
I hate when that happens.
And so here we are. This is now.
Now it's just Bland going for the ball.
Bland's going for the ball. Bland has no interest in making the tackle. But he sees the ball is away from White's body, and now he goes and gets it. So just back-to-back instinctive type of plays where, you know, you see a defensive back just said, okay, you know, I'm not going to worry about the tackle here, but if you're holding the ball away from your body, I mean, Bland just perfect angle to get in there and get the ball away.
Yeah, I mean, just between Lewis on the interception, that ball's mine.
Yeah.
And it's mine forever. And then Bland, and especially for the redemption, because wasn't it, I mean, what do you think, on the touchdown to Ryan Miller, it's Jordan Lewis and Bland both going with, I believe, Mike Evans, and it's wide open Miller for the touchdown. And Bland, after the game, talking to Melissa Stark, he was like, I had to make that play at the end because I screwed it up there on the Miller touchdown.
It was unfortunate that they allowed that. They usually don't have that kind of...
When I saw Jordan...
Early in the season.
When I saw Lewis was involved, I was thinking, Lewis he's going to be right on this. If Lewis is going with Evans, Bland probably screwed this up, and he admitted to it.
Yeah.
But again, what great redemption.
Great redemption for sure. Okay, how about the big hit by Wilson? You talked about the hit.
Oh, dude.
And this was the hit.
He was headhunting.
I think he was.
I mean, he always is.
He's just such a physical player.
He can't help himself, and I do love it. He has plenty of flaws, but the way he smacks people is fantastic.
Okay. The big hit by Wilson, then this one's on Evans. I think this kind of messed Evans up for the remainder of the game.
Yeah. That'll have you thinking twice.
Kind of made him think a little bit, but anyway. Baker wants to throw. He wants to hit Evans on the curl, but he doesn't pull the trigger on the play. When you watch it from the sideline, it's like something flashed where he didn't throw. Like, because you see Evans is running the curl to his left, and he you can see Baker's kind of like he's thinking, I'm going to throw this right here, but he pulls it back down. So now he's into scramble mode. Okay. Nealon gets some late pressure on the play. So when Baker pulled it down, here's Nealon. Now Nealon's chasing. And now Nealon's got Baker on the move. And he has to move to buy himself some time. Evans is able to find some space. So he goes from a curl to more of a vertical route and then across. And as you see, Wilson is at depth. And I think we've all got on Wilson before, like, hey, play with your eyes. You know, we've seen him take bad angles. And this one he played with his eyes. Because he sees Evans break free and come across, and he's at depth, and now he's got a running start. So he sees Baker is located Evans, and now the ball. And he gets there right as the ball gets there.
Yeah, he timed it perfectly.
I mean, he could not have timed that any better the way he made that play. Just a beautiful, beautiful play.
Yeah, he was doing it all over the place. Leafau had a great hit as well. I mean, just the overall physicality, you can't say enough about it.
Yeah. Okay. Talk about the fourth down stop that they made. So this really isn't a stop. This is you got lucky. The fourth down.
Oh my gosh, Shepard drops the ball.
Yeah. Because what happens there, the mesh routes give the defense problems. It's two across, one across, and there's all kinds of.
Shepard was wide open.
That thing opened up. I mean, you could have run that route any better, or those four routes any better, because the Cowboys defense completely opened up in the middle, just completely opened up. And so all of a sudden, the Cowboys do a good job of picking up White, the running back, and Durham, the tight end. But Shepard's covered by Wilson, but Shepard kind of pushes Wilson aside. So Wilson gets kind of knocked off balance. So it's opening up in the middle there for him. That play is so lucky for the Cowboys, because that's going to be a first down and maybe more yards from that.
Totally.
Totally. Big time play. So sometimes when you're playing defense, you got to catch a break. The fact that Shepard dropped that ball, yeah. they caught a huge break, and they were able, you know, to convert that into points. But the mesh routes, those are things that the Cowboys have had a little bit of struggles with this season, and for sure that one could have been a big play, but they caught a break.
Boom. There it is. Krusty's Corner, the first edition. We'll get to looking at the offense coming up 1 hour from now in the commercial-free expressway leading into LA Live. I have some more defensive thoughts, and we got to have a big-time Micah conversation before we get to some college football here. That's next right here on The Fan.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stink Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stink Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we got to have a Micah Parsons conversation. He was disruptive last night. Some of the numbers on him, you won't believe the type of season he's having and the type of effect he's having on this Cowboys defense. 877-881-1053. Segment here in the Nation brought to you by Frankel & Frankel. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call Frankel first. 214-333-3333. With Frankel & Frankel, there is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel & Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And the segment is also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. And we will have a little food fun here, end of the year style, how Texas orders in for the year 2024. If you're a DoorDasher, if you're a Uber Eatser, what were you, what's your most common order on that? Because I got the metrics here for the great state of Texas, see what we're ordering. But first of all, what did you think of Micah's performance last night? I know McCarthy was like, man, can we get a holding penalty, please? Because
oh my gosh.
It feels like every time he's not hitting the quarterback, it's because he's being held or rear naked choked a little bit.
Yeah, when you look at Micah and they double teamed him. And usually the Buccaneers are not a big, they leave their tackles out there for
on an island. They're good
and they're good tackles.
Great offensive line.
They do a really good job with their, you know, and they worry about doubling inside. Like in last night's game, Oso Digizua got doubled 11 times in that football game.
Well, that makes sense because I didn't feel like he was making much of a difference.
It was a big struggle for him because of having to deal with all that. But he's a better player.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if he's being doubled a lot, then that makes sense.
Exactly. And Micah was doubled. He was doubled three times. They gave him six pressures, one sack. They said he rushed the passer 38% of the time, which is 91%. He's on the field. We don't even see Micah drop anymore, right? It's only occasionally.
Not too much.
What was the game? There was a big play that they made. It had a blitz where they dropped him in coverage.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if that was I think it might have been the Bengals game.
It was a Bengals game. Yeah, they got a blitz home.
And somebody else got in.
Exactly. It might have been a Jordan Lewis deal or
Donovan Wilson.
Yeah, but they dropped Mike into coverage. I'm like, oh, okay.
Man, his sack last night where it's the fumble and Vigil almost gets the recovery.
Yeah.
And it sets up like a third and 40 or whatever. That was an awesome play.
Yeah, but with Micah, he's always going to be a factor in these games when it comes to his ability to rush and how, you know, it's not even like moving him around anymore. It's kind of like they're keeping him in certain spots. And I think that Zimmer's trying to do some things to create some matchups for him where it's like, okay, if we feel like this right tackle is not very good, or this left tackle is not very good, or hey, this guard's not very good.
Just attack him.
And like, let's, you know, because there's times you'll see him play, you know, that three technique and play inside, but where they were really good with Micah yesterday was the, some of the twist stuff that he's able to do. You know, when he's the guy that's
looping under.
Yeah, when he's the guy that's the you know, when you look at, like, say his sacks, and this was the sack he had was, and I'll just read it off my notes. This was a twist stuff between Parsons and Golston. So he and Golston were and what happens is Gadecki that gets driven back into the backfield by Parsons. I mean, the tackle just gets taken right in to Baker Mayfield. And Osa beats Barton, the center, and is on Mayfield, but somehow, again, Baker Mayfield kind of escapes.
Baker was really impressive last night.
Leofau missed. Leofau missed, but Parsons didn't. Parsons kind of ran him down, but they did a really great job. It's so funny. This was the one that you mentioned, the sack that Parsons caused and then the fumble. The ball goes right into Nick Vigil's hands. I mean, literally, he's got the ball in his hands. And Baker Mayfield, to his credit,
he was fighting for it.
He fights to get the ball, and now it's kicked to the sidelines. But that was just a great win. I mean, all those guys got off the ball pretty well. But that's what Micah does. He gets off the ball. They use him on those twist stunts, the games, things like that. It creates a lot of problems.
Yeah, and you have the 972. Micah is great, but he is always so gassed at the end of games, and he literally takes plays off. It's not something that I see as a perpetual issue necessarily, but last night it was jarring. That final drive where Tampa goes down and gets the Ryan Miller touchdown on the botch from Deron Bland. Mm-hmm. That drive where they go, it's like 2 minutes and they go score and they make a 2-point game.
Yeah.
That drive, the reason why they were able to just go so easily down the field in 2 minutes and score is because Micah was on the field the entire time and he was completely out of gas. The first play, he gets a nice rush, and then after that, you're literally playing with 10 guys on the field because he was, and I don't want to criticize him because I know he was hustling all game, making plays all over the place, disrupting things. And at the end, he was so out of gas. The point for me is basically, I know it's Micah and you want him on the field, but for what he was giving you, again, you're literally playing with 10 dudes and you're getting no pass rush. And it's the easiest 2 minute drive to go score a touchdown that you've ever seen from Baker, basically. So that was something that jumped out. That final drive, he had emptied the tank, dude. He had nothing left.
Well,
but I wanted to point out some of the numbers that we had on the pregame show. This is stuff going into the game, so things have probably changed since the games were played yesterday. But coming into last night's game, this is the difference that Micah has made this season. And it comes from Robert Mays of The Athletic. One, you have Micah being one of only four players with a 19% pressure rate or better this year. It's Micah, Danielle Hunter, Miles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson. All those guys are super beasts. Micah coming into the game was the best when it comes to pressure rate on third down, the money down. Obvious passing situation, Micah the best in the league at getting pressures there. Now, the big stuff, though, is when you look at the overall defensive numbers when Micah is on the field compared to when he's off. and he's been off plenty due to the injuries, and we saw how bad the defense was at that point. But without Micah Parsons this year, the defense gives up 11 touchdowns, and they get two interceptions, 11-2 TD interception ratio, advantage offense. Quarterbacks, 116 quarterback rating when Micah's off the field. The defense gives up 9 yards per attempt when Micah's off the field, and a success rate of 49% on quarterback dropbacks. So quarterbacks are having a success rate of 49% when Micah's not on the field. That's the same success rate that Josh Allen has this year. And he's probably going to be your MVP. Mm-hmm. So when Micah's off the field, you're giving up a success rate that is like basically going up against Josh Allen. You're making quarterbacks look like Josh Allen, okay, when Micah's off the field. When Micah's on the field, the touchdown to interception ratio becomes equal. 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. The quarterback rating goes from 116 to 86 when Micah's on the field. And that success rate of 49% when he's off the field drops down to 40% success rate for quarterbacks when Micah's on the field. Now, what is a 40% success rate in context? That's Daniel Jones. So with Micah on the field this year, they make quarterbacks perform like Daniel Jones, who doesn't even have a starting job anymore. He's on a different team. And when he's off the field, the quarterbacks are performing at the same level as the MVP, Josh Allen. That is the difference that Micah has made this year, and we cannot understate just how impressive he's been. And I've been critical of Micah, and I'm still even a little bit wondering, like, with the way the Cowboys like to do things, do you really want to pay him $35, $40 million a year? Because you know how the chain reaction from that is. The Cowboys continue to penny pinch everywhere else. They don't pay big money guys and then continue to stock like the Eagles. They will say, okay, we have a big money quarterback, wide receiver, and Micah, and they're going to have to do a lot of the heavy lifting here, or all of the heavy lifting here. So I do think if you want to trade Micah, I don't think it's an asinine conversation based on what you can get for him. But let's just acknowledge how dominant he's been.
Do you feel like that pro departments would look at him the same way you are?
I mean, I think the reason, like, I would want to pay Micah. I would want to give him the money. Sure. And I would want to also try and build a respectable roster everywhere else.
Sure.
That's what the Eagles will do. The Eagles will pay their quarterback. They'll pay a running back, mm-hmm. two receivers, offensive line, tight end. They'll pay guys defensively. And they won't let it handicap them. But the Cowboys will. So there are teams out there that would say, yeah, we'll pay Mike all that money, and we're not going to let it just sacrifice the rest of our roster being, you know, where we're making big-time additions for guys that have to contribute in August. They're still going to go out there and build a quality roster everywhere else. The Cowboys won't. And so that's why it's unique to the Cowboys, where I'd be interested in maybe flipping them. Because especially now with how impressive he's been, you're going to get all the wood for a guy like Micah.
Do you know how many teams have, say, a $50 million quarterback and a $25 million receiver?
Big money quarterback and receiver. I mean, the Eagles are the first team that comes to mind. I guess the Jets now with Rodgers and Devontae Adams.
Sure.
I would have to... Well, the Niners don't have an expensive quarterback yet. The Vikings pay Justin Jefferson.
So
but
the small sample size of how to build a team with a $50 million quarterback and a $25 million receiver.
Yeah, outside of the Eagles. And the Eagles have two big-time – well, the Dolphins. The Dolphins, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Tua.
There you go. But it is a small sample size of how these teams – so do we have a feel that – do you feel like the Dolphins are talent poor?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, I
Eagles,
feel like they've
– no.
No, they're not. No. I mean, they're throwing – they're in win-now mode, clearly, both those teams.
Sure.
At least trying to be.
Yeah.
The Eagles are actually winning for the most part. The Dolphins are not. But, yeah, it's a unique position to be in with the quarterback-wide receiver combo being that expensive.
Right.
But the Cowboys, again, they will allow it. We've already heard
Dolphins,
Stephen
Jones. And the Dolphins could even throw in a defender, right? The corner?
Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bradley Chubb.
Yeah.
Pass rusher that's been injured all year, but they gave him a big money deal.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible, but the Cowboys will make it out to be if they're going to end up paying Micah. But again, he was really, really good last night, save for that last drive when he was just completely, the tank had been emptied.
He missed four games this year. So this could be the fact that you're starting to see now. Remember, it's the end of the year when Micah tends to wear down. because he's playing so many snaps, but he's playing at such a high level, trying to rush the passer and play the run. You know, when he misses four games, like he missed weeks 5, 6, 7 was a bye, 8 and 9. So if he plays those games, man, he might be hitting the wall.
How much more worn down would he be already?
How much worn down?
Because that's been a topic.
Oh yeah.
As the season goes on.
Yeah.
His sack numbers certainly go down, but the pressure rate, I think, is still relatively there. So either way, Micah, he's been incredible this year. Those numbers are jarring, those on-off splits. This is a completely different defense with him on the field. All right, football's finest at the top of the hour, but let's recap the college football weekend with college football Carter Freeman next right here on The Fan. Thank you, Lucius. We are now through one round of the college football playoff. In its new form, 12-team playoffs. You had the home games for the higher-seeded teams this weekend. It was a lot of fun, unless, of course, you were on the losing end of these games. And these were a lot of runaway victories for pretty much everyone. And hated to see the way SMU took that L. But let's welcome in college football Carter Freeman into the program here.
Carter, what's up, guys?
How are you?
I'm great. I actually just saw on Twitter here the TV ratings for the four playoff games. Would you guys like those numbers?
Yes. Let's. I'd like to play a little guessing game.
Okay.
Give me Ohio State-Tennessee as the number one rated game.
That is the number one rated game. Do you have a guess for the number?
I have no guess for the number.
No guess
I'll
for the number.
I'll embarrass myself.
Would that be, let's go with 19 million.
Not quite. 14.3, which is still a lot. Yeah. I believe the SEC championship game got 16 million on ESPN and ABC, so that's pretty comparable for round one of the playoffs. So Notre Dame, Indiana got 13.4.
Of course it did.
And then Clemson, Texas, 8.6 million, and Penn State, SMU, 6.4. So the ESPN game's definitely a lot higher than the games that ended up being on TNT.
Yeah, and I mean those games in the early slate, SMU and Texas were competing with the NFL games that were on.
That's right. Yep, the Friday and Saturday night games both had that time slot just to themselves, so that definitely helped. And I think I don't know if I'd say those. I'd say those were bigger matchups, just because that was 8 and 9, and then 10 and 7 versus the 11 and 12 seeds that played in the earlier games. So, well,
what was your overall takeaway from the weekend? I mean, anything that surprised you?
It's a bummer that the games ended up being blowouts, but if you look at the semifinal games from the 10-year history of the playoff when it was four teams, most of those games were blowouts too. I think what got people so animated this weekend is instead of Clemson blowing out Ohio State or LSU blowing out Oklahoma, it's Indiana getting blown out and it's SMU getting blown out.
And Tennessee getting blown out,
which I think that put to rest any talk that Alabama should have been in, because this Tennessee team beat Alabama and then goes on to lose. If they hadn't scored a garbage time touchdown, they would have lost by the biggest point spread of the entire weekend. They scored late, and then SMU ended up having the largest loss of the four. But yeah, it's unfortunate that they were blowouts, but the home crowd's incredible. I think that just watching that Notre Dame game Friday night, like, that is everything you needed to see, everything you needed to watch to say this needs to stay. I would love it if we had more, as in get rid of some of the bowl matchups, keep the games at home going throughout the playoff. But just for this opening round, it's a great reward that on the flip side, you saw some injuries happen with some of these contenders, like Notre Dame loses one of their best defensive linemen.
Yeah, that's
Texas
huge.
Loses their offensive linemen on like back-to-back plays, which I don't know their status going forward, but like...
Yeah, Majors, the center, I think that was more of a concussion, right? Is what he was dealing with.
And yeah, because he walked off under his own power right afterwards. Yeah. But and they'll have 10 or so days to kind of recover and get ready for the New Year's games. But
they lost their right tackle too,
Home field advantage, huge with all these blowouts. But
huge.
You do risk the injury. I do think getting the bye is still definitely what you want as opposed to playing. But if you do play, you're going to get that crazy college atmosphere that we all know and love. And in a playoff scenario, like, fans delivered.
If you're a Texas fan right now, are you more concerned about the way your defense looked, or are you just happy with the way Ewers in the offense, really the rushing attack, got after it?
And they went up against the worst run defense in the college football playoff, and they should have done what they did, and they did what they did. So you have to be happy with that. Watching Cade Klubnik, who had a good season at Clemson,
just got better and better as the season went on.
Yeah. And in this game, too, he got better and better as the game went on. When Clemson had third and goal on like Texas's 1 yard line late in that game when they could have made it a one score game again. They ran the ball on third down and they ran it on fourth down, which I did not understand. They clearly didn't watch the A&M film because that's what A&M did against Texas and it didn't work. That's Texas's strength is their defensive line. So I'm totally happy with Texas' defensive line, but their secondary, they didn't throw a bear in a whole lot. They threw it number five for Texas and he was getting cooked late in that game. So that's a little concerning, but Clemson's going to have better athletes at receiver, I would say, than Arizona State will in the upcoming matchup. And we saw, as soon as that matchup got set, Texas, what I saw, they were a 14-point favorite.
Yeah, they're a big favorite.
So I'm disappointed in the secondary a little bit because that ended up being the closest game. It was still 14 points. It was still double digits. But there were some things that Clemson was able to do that I don't think Arizona State will be able to do this upcoming game. But then, yeah, going forward, if you go up against, say, an Oregon or even an Ohio State with what we saw what they did to Tennessee in their home playoff game in the Cotton Bowl here, that would be a lot more concerning.
Ohio State, now collision course, the trying to get some redemption on Oregon.
I cannot wait. I almost, as soon as the matchup got set between Oregon and Ohio State, a classic Pac-12 Big Ten game in Pasadena with the sun setting on the mountains, I was like, how much would I be willing to pay? What time do I need to take off to get out there for this game? Because not only is it just, I love the history of the game, you get two schools that would naturally match up in it if the Pac-12 hadn't collapsed, but this is a de facto national championship game in a way. Like, I know, obviously, Texas is a great team. Georgia's a great team. They lost their quarterback. Notre Dame looked excellent against Indiana. These are probably the two best teams in the country. They were rated 1 and 2 in the polls for most of the year. And they get to play in the best setting in the sport. I can't wait. I know you guys were talking earlier. It's surprising that Ohio State is either favored by 1 point, right, is what I last saw. So
yeah, it's either 1 or 1.5.
So they're favored, but you got to think, going back to that game where they lost to Oregon in Eugene in October, they were driving to win that game. They were in field goal range. Yeah. If, I'm blanking on his name, Will Howard, our Ohio State quarterback, doesn't forget how much time is on the clock, Ohio State could very well win that game. Yeah. And even in that loss, they lost by 1 point. That was a back and forth. It wasn't like they had to storm back. They didn't get down big. That was a slugfest the entire way. And I don't see any reason why, after being battle-tested further after both those teams, after that game for both of them, this game isn't just going to live up to the hype, too.
Yeah, it should be fantastic. I mean, Will Howard just played his best game as...
They threw to Jeremiah Smith. They refused to do it against Michigan, and then on their first drive, they're like, you know what, we've got this 19-year-old kid who's a top-5 receiver in the sport. The second he stepped on the field, let's throw to him. And then, boom, 2 touchdowns.
I still just can't believe Ohio State's opening as a 1.5-point favorite. And we know Ryan Day. This is one of the teams. It's Oregon and Michigan. He can't overcome it.
He's 1-6. I think Ryan Day beat Michigan his first year.
First time, yeah.
He didn't play in the COVID year, and he's lost him every year since. And he's lost to Ohio State twice. But, I mean, it's just with, I think the thing is, people look at Oregon like they're a really good team. They're undefeated. They deserve to be the number one seed. They don't excite people. Even though they are fundamentally sound at every spot on the field, they don't just blow you away with a lot of their tape. So maybe that's why, but they've gotten the job done every single week of the season so far. So I feel like they should be the 1 point favorite, but I'm also not surprised with what we just saw from Ohio State. That's the $20 million team that we thought we were getting to begin the season.
Yeah, supposed to be the best roster in Buckeye history.
Yes, and they finally looked like it against a Tennessee team that was good, had a good regular season, deserved to be in the playoff, and they dismantled them.
What's the outlook for SMU going into next season?
Well, you'll have Kevin Jennings back. And
that's huge.
You can't look at this one game, this one poor game that he played at Penn State as like, you know, they hit their ceiling. I think you look at the ACC as a conference, and Miami's not going to retain Cam Ward. He's going to the draft, so you don't know exactly what they're going to be. And they fell off at the end of the year, too, like any Mario Cristobal team tends to do. So with Florida State, you know, they had such a bad year. You look at some of the other powers. Clemson's the scary one because if they shore up that defensive line, I think they're the clear favorite. But SMU has gone undefeated in their conference in the regular season 2 years in a row. They go undefeated in the ACC this year, and they go undefeated in the American last year. This is just a team that competes, and Rhett Lashley, so long as he's there, they're going to compete week in and week out, and they're going to keep winning a lot of games, I think.
Yeah, the ACC is open for business, man. Outside of Clemson, like you mentioned, I don't think Miami will be as strong as they were now that Cam Ward's gone. And, I mean, we'll see what Bill Belichick has to say now in the conference, but in year one...
I got to see it. I have to see that work. And the further we get towards the college football as a more pro-style model, maybe a Belichick can work. But how many NFL coaches have we seen come to the college ranks and just not have the success that everyone thought they would?
Let me think about that as I ask you this question.
Lovie Smith was the first one that came to mind. Him at Illinois over the last couple of years. Him wandering around with his gray beard, not having a clue what he was doing.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. How did Penn State get the path that they did?
Because
That appears to me to be, how does Oregon as the number one seed have to deal with what they have to deal with? But here's Penn State, host a first round game. Their path appears to be much easier than anybody else's.
Them and Texas was the other one we talked about, playing the lowest seeded
team. I think Arizona State's going to give Texas fits, by the way they run the ball.
Cam Scott, and that's a strength-on-strength matchup. Yeah. That's one of the best defensive lines in the playoff in the country versus one of the most unstoppable running backs in the country in Cam Scadaboo. I got to see him firsthand run all over Iowa State in the Big 12 championship game, and Texas's defensive line is a lot better than Iowa State's, but I've just seen Cam Scadaboo 2 years in a row run like crazy against everyone he's played. Yeah. So there's no reseeding with the playoffs. That's maybe something we can talk about going forward.
Yeah, they have to
because with Penn State getting the lowest ranked at large and then the Boise State, the Group of Five team, Boise State earned their keep.
Sure.
Like, they had to win their conference and then have things go around them to get the three, but like it's because we don't reseed things and you should have confidence you beat whoever you play, or you can beat whoever you play. That's what Dan Lanning was talking about today, one of his press conferences. But yeah, Oregon, they get a tough slate because they get Ohio State, then they get potentially Texas, and then Georgia or Notre Dame or Penn State, whoever from that side.
Yeah, but they're the number one seed.
Fun fact about the Fiesta Bowl this year, Penn State and Boise State, they combined have played in it 10 times. They're 10-0. They've never lost. Neither school has lost that game. So one of those schools will pick up their first Fiesta Bowl loss ever.
Never lost!
Hell of a nugget to close things down here. College football, Carter Freeman. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, top of the hour. Let's go Football's Finest, featuring the best sounds from the football weekend next year in the nation.